apparently cars are into protesting is what sounds like is happening outside.
Are they autonomous?
I don't know. There's a lot of honk. Is it that Stephen King story Trucks? Is that or what's come to
Christine?
Pass? Christine also. Wait, surely he didn't write two stories about cars that became autonomous.
He wrote three, possessed. Didn't he? And he also wrote that monster trucks movie about the cars with the monster inside, the trucks with the monster inside them.
Maximum Overdrive?
Maximum Overdrive is about cars.
I think that's based on the story Trucks, but it's, I don't know, man.
Christine is about a car that's haunted.
He wrote a short story in his most recent collection that's also about a car that's actually an alien and eats people. Monster cars.
Didn't his son, isn't that Nosferatu book about a vampire? It's a vampire that drives around. It's not a vampire that's a car.
I thought you could say a vampire car, which I might be interested in. Anyway.
I read that Joe Hill book, that first one, when we were at a house with my parents in up in Sonoma, and I was so freaked out by it that I didn't sleep the entire night.
I guess, you know, he came by it honest. He was probably, he was probably born with the knack to scare.
Yeah. So what are the cars doing? What are the cars protesting?
It sounded like the craziest cacophony of constant horn honking that I have ever heard for about the last hour outside.
Wait. So you're saying the cars are horny and they're outside your house?
Yes, that's exactly what's happening.
You should be careful.
They're here.
Lock your doors.
They're here for a reason. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I don't know. I'm confused. Like, I'm not exactly in downtown urban density here. It's like, you know, as San Francisco goes, it's pretty quiet and residential out here. So I don't know I'm not sure what the...
You're in the sideshow zone, though, for sure. Like I used to live out by you, and we would have a fairly regular street racing component, but usually not at... Let me check my watch. 7 o'clock at night.
Definitely get some good motorcycle roars up and down the street occasionally. But this is more like, protesting is very much an on foot kind of face to face situation. I should have gone out there. I should have gone to see what exactly is this setup where cars are just hanging out and honking nonstop.
Look, when I lived in the Inner Sunset 10, 15 years ago, I was walking the dog one morning and I watched a guy at 3 o'clock in the morning because she wanted to do a early morning barf. And I watched a guy do a series of donuts in an intersection and then just sideswipe four cars that were parked on the side of the street. Ooh. Before putting it into a telephone pole.
Wow.
And I had my cell phone. I picked it up and I called 911. They were like, yeah, are you at blah, 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 and blah, blah, blah. I was like, yeah, we already know. It's like, okay, thanks. We're done.
Hey, you did your civic duty.
Yeah. Narked. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
Hey, Brad.
Hello.
Feels like we just did this.
Hours
ago.
Like 12 hours ago or something. Today is a twofer.
Bookending the day with podcasts.
That's right.
If you don't know, we're referencing the May edition of the patron-only exclusive podcast episode.
I see you're changing your ways. I heard the past start to come out, and then you're like, oh,
tried.
Patron.
Look, we have a question about that for next month. Oh, we'll have to get to that in a couple of weeks.
Oh, boy.
We talked about, I don't even remember at this point. We talked about projects, I think, and also
rambled about some stuff we're doing at home, but yes, also your, situation.
Yeah. So, I don't know, a few months ago, maybe sometime in the 1900s, sometime between now and the birth of the universe, I had a friend who tried to hack me
repeatedly, relentlessly. Yeah. I think we touched on it in the InfoSec episode a little bit, right?
No, it happened after the InfoSec.
Oh, that's right. Episode. No, actually, that's right. Because you were like the next week after we did the InfoSec thing, you were like, man, this would have been a great story for that thing where we told people how not to get hacked because I just got hacked.
Well, and so the irony is, of course, it's the stuff. It's always the places that you can't do. I don't want to get into the details of how they did the hack, but I will tell you what I did to prevent future harassment. but like the stuff that we talked about was really useful, but there's another layer. So this is call this a follow-up for the InfoSec episode. One of the things that became clear in the process of this is that if you have somebody who's willing to do a social engineering hack and they know your email address, they can reset passwords pretty much at will, you know, initiate the password reset process, which often locks you out of the account if you do it like 3 or 4 times in a row, or they can just cancel your accounts on people whose customer service reps aren't up to snuff. And I had that on multiple services, like people trying, this person was trying to disable my, public accounts with this public facing email. So what I did was something that I think we touched on a little bit in the InfoSec episode, was spun up a completely random, never been used, never associated with me email address that is secured with Google's enhanced account protection stuff, which uses hardware encryption on your phone, whether it's iPhone or Android, or a YubiKey, like a hardware encryption device or something similar, to completely lock down your phone so that anytime you try to access this account from a new device, you have to have the hardware token in order to use it.
It's pretty intense.
It is. I'm going to go and tell you, it was scary signing up for the EAP account, because it's like, look, here are the ways that you can lose this account. And if you lose these things, you can never recover this account.
Yikes.
And then I made that account the recovery account for literally everything that is important to me.
Oh, good. Be careful. Put that email address in your Fire Safe.
So I have the codes in the Fire Safe, as well as other secure locations, and the YubiKeys in the Fire. I have 2 YubiKeys. One's in the Fire Safe, and one is on my person. All right.
You're prepared.
Yeah.
My first question, and obviously you're comfortable with this, or you wouldn't have done it. But
yeah.
I guess the thing that comes to mind is that Google's reputation for tracking and data handling and stuff is maybe not as sterling as it once was, which we will get into here in a minute.
So,
I know this is a custom program, or that the very aim of this type of account is to protect you.
But the point of this type of account, this was what this was their response to Podesta's emails getting hacked,
like the 2016 political stuff, right?
By state level agents. So not like your normal garden variety hacker that's coming after somebody like me.
Yes.
But, you know, the Russians.
So state actors.
Yeah.
Yes.
And they advertise that they have had no breaches where people followed the recommended procedures.
All right.
This is where their high level access, this is how those people access. It even goes all the way down, Brad, to like not allowing you to connect stuff to Google's APIs.
Okay.
So it's pretty, like you can't hook up your smart things to this Google account because they don't want other APIs getting access to the data at a low level.
That is pretty thorough, but so you would take this, even with the concerns around Google's handling of privacy and security and the just greater visibility of Gmail as a service over like maybe a little bit more security through obscurity of using a slightly less well-known service?
So my feeling on that, this is a good question, because my feeling on that is that the people that are at Google and are concerned about security on these accounts and in general, like user security and stuff like that, are probably more capable, even on the larger threat profile, more public service than I am.
Yes.
Plus, the email address is already obscure, so it's, you know, there's one level there.
That's fair. Like,
to generate the email address, I literally opened up 1Password, told it to generate a three-word passphrase, and registered the Gmail account with that and a 64-character password and all the two-factor stuff and, you know, all that. So, yeah, it's...
I ask one more question, and if you don't want to say, then we can cut this. But
I'm not telling you the email address, Brad.
Well, I was just going to ask if it's a gmail.com address or if they have a different domain for these.
It's a gmail.com address.
It is.
You can find out if you, I'll put a link in the show notes, but it's called Google's enhanced account protection. I think EAP is what the acronym is.
And now you've got me feeling like maybe I should go check this out.
My problem is that my email address is a variation of my first name and last name. So there's no ambiguity. Yeah. And I also happen to share a first name, last name with somebody who's very famous.
Who could that be?
Well, Will Smith, he's the catcher for the Dodgers.
Oh, wow, man. He's a catcher too. He really.
Yeah. He's real good. They're not playing this year, so it's the heat's a little off.
He's an excellent baseballman.
But yeah, so that stuff is, I feel like Google security is better. Like if you look at the number of places that security failure can happen on a domain you control yourself or something like ProtonMail, you know, ProtonMail is probably the next best alternative to this. Mm-hmm. It was the other thing I considered. The danger of hosting the domain myself means that you can be domain jacked. The danger of setting up those domains means that if you don't set up the low level stuff right in the domain for the server that you're hosting, then it won't be encrypted properly along the way. And you'd be man in the middle or whatever.
You're talking about running your own actual mail server?
Yeah,
I didn't want to run my own actual mail server. No, even I wouldn't try something like that. And I try to do everything myself.
I used to do that. I did it for a long time.
Yeah.
And then Gmail came along and at the same time, spam got really bad.
Right.
And I was just like, I'm never going to be as good as these people are.
Yeah.
So I give up.
The world got way more complicated and quite a bit more frightening.
Exactly. Do you want to talk about the actual, so that's the update on InfoSec stuff. Yeah. We'd promised it a long time ago and figured now was a good as
protect yourself.
Good as time as any.
It can happen to anyone.
But if people are interested, I will post a step-by-step blog post of what I did to, you know, the goal was not just to keep the main account from getting hacked, but also to make the recovery, to put all the recovery addresses for all of the accounts that are important someplace that they're safe.
Right. Yes.
So that like, if my phone, if somebody simjacked me, I wouldn't lose. You know, my Gmail wouldn't recover to a phone number that was simjacked, and then I lose the Gmail and everything else cascades down from there.
Yes.
It did not feel good, this process. I'll just say that.
I'm sure.
Like it was an unpleasant, highly stressful 5 days.
I would love to read that blog post if you end up doing that, though. I would like to see all that laid out.
Yeah, I would do that.
On e-paper.
So what we're going to talk about today is privacy.
Yeah.
Which is what you alluded to. You know, for a long time, people have talked about why the big tech companies are maybe bad for your personal privacy. And I don't think a lot of people have concrete examples of why that loss of personal, like the, you know, who cares if Google sees what I browse on the web? I'm not doing anything dangerous or illegal. I'm not breaking any laws. Why does it matter? And, it's a fair response. But it's more the amount of data that's being collected and the type of data that's being collected and what the different companies are using it for is all over the place and ranges from, you know, damaging to the fabric of our society up to, the dangers of late stage capitalism. So I thought maybe the way to start this is to map the big five tech companies and see where they land with with their, let's say, what their goals are for your data and how they use your data internally as based on their public personas and activities.
Okay, and this is big five by data gathering, right? Not by like market cap, because we're not, this is not a FANG situation, right?
What's FANG?
Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Netflix, Google.
Kind of it is a FANG situation,
is it?
But it's not other five.
Well, that's what I meant. Netflix doesn't belong in that conversation, right?
I mean, Netflix is probably collecting like data.
They are, but it's not the same.
Who cares?
Yeah. This is a FAMG. Swap out Netflix for Microsoft and then you're there.
Yeah, that's right.
Is that right?
That's it. Yeah, that seems right. So
that's not a pronounceable acronym. We need a better.
AFMG.
Okay, sure. That one rolls right off the tongue.
Yeah, it's like affing, but anyway. It's Amazon, Apple, Facebook, Microsoft, and Google.
It's the data five.
Yeah, and like these are relevant, not in this case, Amazon is actually relevant both for the e-commerce side where they sell you everything in the world, but also the fact that they host AWS, which is potentially where Netflix lives, right? Yeah. But Microsoft tracks data. They have a search engine. They have products that search data. Windows is essentially free and has become a service that we all use versus a thing that we pay for now. Facebook sells ads to everyone in the world and tracks data so they can micro-target those ads. And Google aspires to do that, even though they're not as good at the micro-targeting.
But they would if they could.
Well, and also they want to collect data about literally everything in the world. Like they're the Google, you know, the Futurama brains that want to absorb all the information in the universe and destroy it so it can't change. That's Google.
Great. Do no evil.
And then Apple sells phones and laptops, basically, and like movies and books and other apps.
Is it okay? Is it premature to ask this question before we talk about this? No. Do you want to just do a quick ranking in your mind of like best to worst? On
like based on my on our perceptions right now?
I bet I could guess your ranking.
I want you to tell me my ranking and tell me your ranking at the same time.
They're probably the same thing.
Okay.
I think
that's probably right.
Based on my exposure to this subject. I'm gonna say Apple's probably the best on this.
I think that is the story that they tell.
Okay.
And I think that they
Bear in mind that best does not necessarily mean good or great, just relative to the others.
I think they're probably pretty good in the categories where they really matter, like phone data and things like that.
I was gonna say let's say that the San Bernardino FBI iMessage unlocking thing probably paved a whole lot of runway for them on this.
That and the fact that they roll patches out when they discover a rootkit that law enforcement or spy agencies are using is pretty good.
Right.
The place that Apple fails in my eyes is when they don't pay enough attention to their ecosystem and there are holes there that apps can exploit.
I have no idea how credible this person is, but there was some security researcher on Twitter a month or two ago saying that current iOS is just Swiss cheese, like horrible, horrible security situation.
I think as the devices get more complex, that is the thing that inevitably happens. Yeah.
So hopefully, I'm sure that I have to assume that's still a priority for them and they will catch back up.
I would hope so.
Yeah. All right. I'm going to say Apple is probably the best here. I feel like Microsoft and Amazon kind of neck and neck.
Maybe tied for two.
I feel like maybe this is the result of a very effective PR campaign, but I feel like Microsoft is a lot better about this than they used to be.
I would say that Microsoft would be my number two.
Okay. Well, you know, but as soon as I say that, then that reminds me of the ongoing fiasco around Windows 10 telemetry and people that like desperately want to turn all that stuff off. And like, you couldn't, I think, when Windows 10 first came out, right? Like didn't people have to scream and holler for a while before they added controls to disable a lot of that stuff?
There's all sorts of nightmarish stuff in Windows 10 that they send back. And then on top of that, they also distribute apps to people for money, like Candy Crush and stuff
that
end up on your machine, whether you want them or not, which is
okay. Maybe I might have to downgrade Microsoft to a
most of my concerns. So Microsoft has a search engine, which is a questionable business to be in these days without an active business model. And they definitely, with Windows 10, you are the product, not the customer.
Right. Great. Right. Wonderful.
Cause like, realistically, nobody's switching to Linux. I mean, maybe like three people are.
I'm going to switch my NAS to Linux sooner or later.
That's a whole different story. Okay, so Microsoft's number two. Amazon, you think number... For me, Amazon and Microsoft are kind of the chaotic neutrals in that on some things they're probably really good and on some things they're really bad.
Yeah.
And not necessarily... Like, I don't think it's a part of an intentional policy.
So I almost feel like there are two rankings to be completed here. One is sort of like their intentions, like kind of an abstract morality.
Yeah.
And then the other one is like kind of in practice what they're actually doing.
I think the only one of these companies that said, hey, here's what our abstract morality is Apple.
Right.
Well, so it's not like Facebook is going to come out and say, hey, it's our goal to let advertisers reach every single consumer on the planet directly with a message that's tailored to speak to them.
Like, hey, we're okay destroying democracy if we...
Actually, I guess they probably do say that at ad conferences.
Keep boosting our stock price. The reason I brought that up is Amazon, I feel like, probably does not have the best of intentions, if I had to guess. But
Amazon is trying to move. Look, when you when you search on Amazon for a 35-pound bag of Lucky Charms marshmallows, and then every third-party ad you see for 2 weeks is for 35-pound bags and 33-pound bags and 37-pound bags and 16-pound bags to see exactly what the number of pounds of Lucky Charms marshmallows it is to get you to turn that inclination into a purchase, that is their intent. It is pretty clear, which I think makes it, it's a little better, I think.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah,
sure. I was just gonna say, I feel like the relatively limited scope of what I use Amazon services for kind of limits the damage there. It's like, you know, I'm trying to think outside of like their retail ecosystem. What do I even use my Amazon login for? And I can't come up with much, you know? So it's kind of contained to their core business as opposed to like a Google or most of these others kind of extend their tendrils out into all kinds of different segments of your life, right?
So the thing that about Amazon, and it's funny because you don't ever actually hear about Amazon and data collection, is that it seems like they are pretty straightforward. Like they're probably collecting, if you have, like I have the Kindle app and the Amazon app on my phone, right? They probably know where I am at any given day and like what my routes are like and you know, how much time I spend on public transit versus in my car and things like that. And then they also have the in-house speakers with the Alexa devices that have sometimes always on cameras and always on microphones.
I completely forgot about the Echo stuff.
Yeah.
Okay. Never mind there.
Well, I mean, it's easy to be paranoid about the always on microphones, but given the way machine learning stuff works on those devices, and the fact that if they got caught sending everything up, you would be able to tell by looking at your firewalls. I'm kind of okay. Like, I don't think that those things are malicious. I think they're just trying to expand markets. Amazon's goal is to expand and fill every market on Earth.
Of course. They are the new Microsoft in that respect. What was the old Microsoft like unofficial slogan?
Use Windows or we'll fucking kill you.
That's the one. There's our episode title. God, what was it? It was
Every computer on
it was their approach to entering new markets. It's like a 4X type thing. It's like it's literally like an
expand exploit. Exterminate.
It's like kind of like that, but it's I can't.
It's how they explained why they bought into it, right?
Embrace, extend, extinguish. That's it. I had to Google it. It was embrace new technology, extend into that new technology, extinguish all competitors in that technology. It seems like Amazon, that's what Amazon does or wants to do.
That's
now,
a
right?
Seattle thing, I guess, because Amazon does the same thing.
What are they putting in the water up there?
We don't think about Amazon doing that anymore because it's been so long since there were new markets for Amazon to expand into,
right?
That we've forgotten.
Yeah. And there were some that they tried and, you know, like the Kindle Fire tablet type stuff, like they haven't been successful everywhere. Anyway,
you say that, except for the Kindle Fire tablets are incredibly popular in young children.
Oh,
so they're taking the long view and they're just getting the kids hooked when they're little by selling cheap tablets to kids that have it's funny. Amazon actually, I think, has the best ecosystem for kids because they're not relying on algorithms and stuff like that to pick programming. They actually have humans programming books and apps and videos that are age appropriate for kids. And it's just all about spending money on Amazon. It's really incredible content. It's like, here's Jimmy's first iPad purchase on Amazon.com. I'm kidding. But like that stuff is, it's kind of like a library that you pay $10 a month to join.
Well, great.
You're making a real frowny face over there.
Yeah. I like the public library. It's a nice place to be.
We don't have a Fire tablet in our house, just for the record.
Okay, that's good to know. Anyway, yeah, like obviously Google and then Facebook are bringing up the rear here with Facebook at a distant last, right?
I don't know. I think it's definitely true that Facebook has a worse reputation in this space. I don't know that what they do is demonstrably worse than what Google does.
In terms of tracking. Maybe I'm biased because I'm subconsciously also thinking about like the way their news algorithms operate and how they choose to serve certain content or don't, et cetera.
I think you're probably right in that Facebook is at a disadvantage here and is going to come in last place because
they are evil in ways that are outside of the scope of this conversation.
Well, no, I was going to say it was probably because Google hasn't successfully had a social network ever.
Right.
So they haven't had the opportunity to be evil in this particular way.
Do you think they do it too?
I mean,
did they ever, did they ever mean do no evil, or was that always a front?
The people I know who worked at Google 15, 10 years ago were firmly in the do no evil.
Yeah, okay. I'd believe that.
Yeah. I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I bet there were a lot of kind of like OSS kind of free software.
Yeah.
Types, right?
I mean, like these sort Fifth of went to work there after working at like, Subversion, right?
Like the crusading open software and like closed privacy types.
And just to be clear, like in terms of net, so here's the other difference with Google is that the net positive that Google offers by selling advertising in exchange for search engine access is that we don't live in the Arthur Clarke world where access to information is gated by your ability to pay for access to information.
Okay.
Right. Like, yeah. I don't know if you ever read 2001, but there's a significant passages about Haywood Floyd having to start his paid agent to go out and do the network searches to look at to look up the information that he wants from all the available databases.
Right.
Kind of like a what's the library, the legal
database? LexisNexis. I was just about to bring that up as like that's the real world example of that, right?
Yeah. And that was the vision that we all had until Sergey and Larry and Eric Schmidt were like, hey, you know, we could probably get advertisers to pay for this if we make the ads usable and good. And then the ads race to the bottom and that whole thing has been a shit show. And, you know, but as a result of that, we have free maps for everywhere in the world. And we have, you know, the ability to type something into a machine, a box on our computer, and have full access to all of the human information that's ever been collected.
Yeah, I guess I'll just try to forget the day that I noticed that free map started labeling certain addresses home and work without
Taco Bell.
Without my input.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Look, hey, true story. For a long time, Google thought that Gina's office was the when my daughter was very new and we were like, she would just drive someplace to a mall to go walk when the weather was bad. So Google thought that her office was the mall for a long time.
That's how we're going to defeat the robots.
Yeah, just be unpredictable. Look, as long as you never leave the house, they can never tell where you work.
That's right.
Yeah, think about that.
Yeah, what if home and work are the same place? What now, yeah. AI?
What if we're just shut in all the time? I think Facebook is probably the worst because the thing that you're trading for the access to that personal information with Facebook isn't infinite free maps and all of the human information in the world, but it's pictures of your friends' kids and like angry people yelling about being racist to their friends.
Yes, and propaganda that is... let's say
actively damaging the fabric of society,
having a deleterious effect on our nation.
Yes. Agreed.
Yeah. Like there's not much. I mean, whatever, other people have different perspectives, but there's not much of redeeming value to be had on Facebook in my view.
Do you still have an account?
I have one. And I should probably delete it. Like I haven't used it. I stopped using Facebook way before it was cool to stop using Facebook.
Yeah, same.
Sorry. I don't even... Also, I don't own a TV.
God, you have a fucking TV.
I'm joking.
Don't lie to the readers.
That's the stereotype. I stopped using Facebook just because I'm antisocial, not because I objected to Facebook on a moral level. But then it turned out that they were a terrible company. And... So I should have deleted it by now. Like I haven't posted on that account.
And leaders, I don't know that the company is I know.
Yeah, I will say in the last week you have been seeing a surprising number of the rank and file at that company talking publicly.
Kind of making this is not as much of a stink.
This is going to turn into a different conversation very quickly. But I haven't posted to my Facebook account in years, and I don't know why I even still have it. I'm sure it's not that hard to extract all of your whatever's on there, photos and so forth, and then just kill it, right?
So I went through that process. You can deactivate the account, which means you no longer show up in people's searches for all intents and purposes, you aren't there.
Okay.
They now let you do that and leave Facebook Messenger live, which turns out to be really useful because I have people that I only ever talk to on Facebook Messenger.
Yeah. Or if you're like me and you think to look at it twice a year and then you see, oh, this person must think I've been ignoring them for 6 months.
Yeah, this person invited me to their birthday party in 2018.
Right.
Shit. Yeah. Okay, so how do they know all this stuff? This is the question, and it used to be really straightforward, because it used to be that people would put a tracking cookie, advertising networks would put a tracking cookie. So this is why Google bought DoubleClick, is because they had tracking cookies on every website in the country because everybody had DoubleClick ads. And with that tracking cookie, they could tell things like how long you stayed on a page, what pages you saw, how long you stayed on a page, things like that. And from there, they could infer a lot of information about like your personal beliefs, your political beliefs, your religion, your gender, your age, whether you had kids, whether you were a good consumer, whether you were looking for a new car, and they could tailor your ad experience accordingly. And then Facebook introduced the like button. Remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we were like, we should put this like button on all the whiskey sites, and people inside the whiskey media organization at the time, who shall remain nameless, were like, this thing is bullshit and it's tracking all sorts of horrible data. No. And then we did it anyway, which was the right business choice, but the wrong. Anyway, it doesn't matter. The point is, I'm sorry, Dave, A. And B, they, with the script, they can tell a lot more information. So they can tell things like, how far down the page you scroll? Did you click on any images? Where did you go after there? Where did you come from sometimes? Things like that. And from that, they can build a really, really good psychographic profile of not just the people who have Facebook accounts, but literally everyone who uses the web.
Good.
And that's gone even further with, they have a tracking pixel now that works kind of the same way. And then as we've shifted to mobile over the last 12, 13 years, apps built include tracking. Every app you've ever used probably has some sort of tracking thing.
Can you expand on tracking pixel for a second?
A tracking pixel is just a single pixel image that loads on the page.
God damn it. Okay. I was afraid that's exactly what that was. I feel like that is just full on sinister.
I mean, it's, you know, it's complicated. It's like, look,
they're not even hiding it. I mean, they are hiding it.
Yeah, they are hiding it because you can't see the pixel,
but they're not pretending anymore.
they're definitely not pretending. And if you look at like, well, I mean, I have the pie hole running right now, so all of my tracking pixels are gone. My Facebook container keeps saying nothing. So the mobile stuff added another level because it allows them to directly measure. So if you have the Google app, the Facebook app, the Amazon app, I assume the Edge apps, I haven't looked at their terms of service, then they know. And if you use the location services for iOS devices that come with things like iMessage and Find My Friends and Find My iPhone, then they track the position of your devices independently of you constantly. You know, you can load up your location tracking report in Google if you have the Google Maps app or the Google search app installed, and it will tell you where you've been during the entirety of the time you've been running that app, which for me goes back to like 2008.
Wow.
Which is nice if you want to know like where you had dinner when you were in San Diego last time. Very convenient.
Sure.
But, you know, maybe that's a little bit too much information for companies have.
It's a pretty fine grained amount of, pretty detailed spectrum of a lot of your life.
Well, and so then what happens from there with Facebook, because they also know who your friends are. I mean, Google knows who your friends are because they're the people that presumably email you, but I never ever email my friends because they're my friends. So
why would you do that to them?
Yeah, no, I wouldn't do that to you. So, you know, Facebook can tell that, oh, you were actually with these eight people on Tuesday night. Maybe this is bored. Immediately before that, you Googled, you know, you searched for how to play the board game Azul. And they know that your board game night is on Tuesday night. So they know next Sunday a week to start talking, putting board game stuff into your feed and things like that. And this is all well and good, except for you can also buy advertising that targets people incredibly specifically on a little bit Google, but to a really specific extent on Facebook. And you can find out what Facebook knows about you by going to your personality profile on the Facebook page. When I'm going to it right now. You can go to settings. They move it all the time, so it's hard to find. ads, where is it? Fit settings, ads, and it tells you your interests. I go through and remove those constantly. But like, for example, mine are strike action, nobility, iOS, consumer electronics, social network, hip hop music, Spotify, computers, mobile phones.
Those are categories they come up with?
These are categories they pulled algorithmically based on my behaviors, who I'm friends with, where I go. Like, they know I like Waze. They know I like Humans of New York, that old blog. I don't use Facebook very much anymore, obviously. They know I like Adam Savage. They know I like the Renaissance Fair because I think that's probably the closest thing they had to Maker Faire.
They don't need to track data for that. Who doesn't like the Renaissance Fair?
I mean, that's I'm just kind of ambivalent. I'm joking. Like a lot of work.
I'm joking. I've never been to a Renaissance Fair.
I got no beef with the people who like to dress up and beat each other with swords.
I'll eat a turkey leg anytime.
I've seen you eat a turkey leg. That has happened in my presence. They basically, that's all well and good if they're just trying to do late stage capitalism business and sell you a bunch more socks. But when you get to something like Cambridge Analytica, which we haven't talked about at all on the podcast and are probably going to get hate mail for, but whatever, then you can target, you not only can build a profile based on what the interests of the person are and whether they're potentially, you know, somebody that can be convinced to believe things, but you also can build a profile that tells you specifically what kind of arguments to use based on what's worked with your friends.
Wow.
And what's caused your friends to engage with new ideas and things like that.
Oh, I guess I remember some of that stuff came out of some of those congressional hearings a few years ago, right?
I mean, something came out of those congressional hearings, but nothing useful.
Or that stuff was floating around since the 2016 election, right? Some of the ideas that you're talking about, specifically like the styles of argumentation and stuff like that.
Yes. And there's actually been, like, in 2015, there was a research study done by Cambridge and Stanford in which they looked at Facebook profiles of 86,000 participants, matched their on-platform data against psychological profiles that they got them to fill out by filling out a personality test app. And their psychographics on the Facebook profiles were more accurate than they ever would have expected.
Great. Wonderful.
Like, presumably because of that, if you use Facebook, or even if you don't use Facebook, Facebook probably knows more about you than your spouse does or your partner does.
Wonderful. So you're married to Facebook is what you're saying.
I feel like I'd probably have a nicer house if I was married to Facebook, Brad.
That's fair. So those profiles turn out to be incredibly useful if you want to target people to convince them that they live in an alternate version of reality, for example, it seems.
Yeah, which is why, and the nice thing about that is you only have to convince them once and then they sign up to hit the follow button.
Right.
And then they just keep getting those things in their feed over and over again.
Great.
And like, just to be clear, when we talk about Google being okay on this stuff, I hadn't even considered YouTube, which is a complete shit show on this regard.
Right.
Because like if you watch videos about steel beams and gasoline in any combination, you're going to get fucked up 9/11 deniers.
Yes.
And horrific stuff like that in your feed. Like it is very easy to go from, well, okay, this one doesn't work anymore because people put it in articles and they like actively work to remove it. But you use people to go from, I want to learn about the moon landing and I want to learn about spacewalks to the moon landings were fake in like three videos.
Great.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
So that's it. That's how the tracking. So how do you avoid this?
Yeah. That was going to be my question.
That's the real question, right? You can block ads and block everything that Facebook and Google and probably Amazon and Microsoft do.
Yeah. This conversation is convincing me that I should probably have some level of blocking that at least targets this kind of tracking, if nothing else.
One of the other things is there's a browser you might have heard of it called Firefox. It's been around for a while.
Yeah.
They include something that they actually push. Firefox is really interesting because it's like they have to make money. They don't have, it's not like Chrome where you're trading a really fast, convenient browser for access to your data at a really low level. Firefox has to make money somehow. And one of the but they also are really good at defaults. So like their defaults are pretty secure, and then they pop things up when they add new features. Like they added this thing called Facebook Container a couple months ago that basically knows what all the Facebook trackers look like. And they isolate the ones that are put there. If you don't have a, like, basically if you have a Facebook cookie that shows you're logged into Facebook, you get one Facebook knows who you are, and they track that across all sites. You kind of signed up for that. If you don't have a Facebook cookie on your thing, they put a cookie on there that basically builds a shadow profile of you in their system.
Wow.
That measures who you are and what you believe in at a really low level. And this, what this does is makes a separate cookie for every single site you visit. So it craps up their database with a bunch of one-offs, which is pretty, I think, a good thing.
Sure. I like that.
And blocks them. Yeah.
It's a nice soft way to push back.
You could also do ad blockers, like Ghostery is one that I've used in the past for this type of thing. And like, you know, we both are content people. We both have made money with advertising right. over the years.
Yes. And that is, to be clear, that is the kind of philosophical principled reason, I guess I would say, that I don't tend to block ads because it feels somewhat hypocritical.
Well, and also we've gone in the last 10 years from like 5% of people blocking ads to something like 25 to 40%, depending on which markets you're in, blocking ads. I'm happy to block ads on sites that I pay for. Like I have a Giant Bomb subscription. I have a Washington Post subscription. I have a New York Times subscription. Yeah. I block ads on all of those sites. Sorry, Brad.
We don't have any. There's nothing there.
I know, you guys don't. A lot of people charge money for ads and then still run ads.
Still, yes.
So Ghostery, AdBlock Plus, both fine solutions for that. Ghostery is cross-platform, so you can run on all your devices, and then it shares your settings for whitelists and blacklists across all of those. And if you're worried about not generating revenue for your favorite websites, you can always go the blacklist only approach, which I like to think of that as the tonsil stone rule.
Okay.
Where yes, once I see an ad for tonsil stones or something equally appalling on your site, I'm going to block ads forever.
You had to bring up the tonsil stones again.
It's super fucking gross, man. They shouldn't do tonsil stone ads. Like, you're asking to get blocked doing that stuff.
Yeah.
And then if you have kids that use devices, you can use things like Pi-hole, which is a Raspberry Pi based ad blocker that lives on your network. It serves as your DNS server. And it basically says anytime any of your devices on your network ask for have requests to sites that are either blocked because they're spyware tracking or because they're ads like Google ad services or Facebook ad services or whatever, they just say, we don't know who this is.
Yeah.
We don't know what this is. The ad's not going to work. And then the ad times out and you get a no ad page and your page loads a lot faster.
Here's one I just thought of that I hope you know more about than I do.
Okay.
Because I didn't think to research it because it just popped into my head. But talking about Pi-hole, like you're essentially running kind of like a cached or caching DNS server locally. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of letting things through or not, depending on what they are. But then it still has to go on to a remote, like an authoritative DNS, right? Eventually. Something I'm starting to see, and maybe you've seen this as well, is that I'm starting to see those remote, like the authoritative DNS is also starting to incorporate some level of this kind of blocking.
Well, so like AT&T did this years ago and got in trouble for it.
Oh, interesting. Well, I guess it's coming back because like who are the 1.1.1.1 people? Is that Cloudflare?
That's Cloudflare.
I believe that's right. Right. So they launched. What is the name for that? For families. That's right. They launched. Did you see that a while back? They launched 1.1.1.1 for families.
And that just is basically high power internet filtering.
Yes.
I like that. I think that's a cool idea.
I also find really amusing because it's not actually, of course it can't be because they're already using that stock address for their main one. They call it 1.1.1.1 for families, but it's actually 1.1.1.2.
I was hoping it was going to be 1.1.1.69.
No, that would not be family oriented.
Yeah. That's the one when you only want porn.
Oh, actually, sorry. They also have a .3. .2 is no malware and .3 is no malware or adult content. So,
oh, wow.
So like you can set that at the DNS level now for your kids if you want. And then there's, is it Quad9? Are you familiar with them?
I know of Quad9, but I don't know who runs it.
Yeah, I don't either. I've seen their name. Let's see. This is in collaboration with IBM. Global Cyber Alliance, and PCH, the Packet Clearinghouse.
Oh, I love a Packet Clearinghouse. Ed McMahon comes to your house and gives you a check if you win the Packet Clearinghouse contest.
I don't know. I am curious who runs this now, but I have seen, they're in Berkeley. I have seen a number of people talking like they think Quad 9 is the business one to trust. It looks like they are a 501c3 nonprofit.
Ooh, that's so good.
Anyway, I don't know how much you know about that stuff, but like, would you consider switching to, like, I'm still using my ISP's DNS because I just don't, whatever.
Well, your ISP is, you have a good ISP.
I have a good ISP.
Yeah. I pointed it at Cloudflare. I can't remember when I set it up. I know what I did. I did Google and then rolled over to Cloudflare. So there's two things about using non-ISP DNS servers. One is that if you use stuff that uses edge networks like Akamai, mm-hmm. and the global fast DNS isn't set up right for your particular ISP, you won't hit the right nodes to get the fastest downloads from stuff like Steam and PSN and Xbox Live.
That's a pretty big one. And like Netflix even, right?
Probably even Netflix. Video is easier because it's not latency dependent. Okay, and Netflix doesn't use all of your bandwidth.
But where that will matter is when Microsoft's xCloud comes into effect, or if Stadia ever becomes popular, because then you have video streaming with latency requirements.
Right. So when I used Cloudflare when they first rolled out 1.1.1.1, I wasn't getting good edge network performance on AT&T's fiber in the Bay Area. And I sent a ticket and they fixed it pretty quickly. Okay, I haven't gone back and tried it again.
So that can be configured?
Yeah, it's just a matter of them detecting what the nodes are from your DNS server.
Right.
So and the way that stuff works is when you ask for an Akamai address, your local router knows, hey, push the Akamai request to here rather than to some definitive Akamai DNS server. The caching works really well on this. Like it feels as fast as the Google DNS that I've used in the past. So
you're talking about your Pi hole,
the Pi hole. And that's running on like the first gen Raspberry Pi.
Okay.
Yeah.
I also have one of those.
I saw the tonsil stone thing the other day and I was like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I'm going to get rid of this right now. And I did, and I have no regrets. I'm looking to see. So Pi hole also comes with some other stuff, like some privacy stuff. Obviously you also can filter adult content and things like that if you have kids using the internet. And you can do that on a per client basis. So if you want to check out the porn, but don't want your kids to do it, then that's a totally legitimate thing you can do. It's pretty cool. The other thing you can do that's a challenge with network-wide blocking is you can set up shortcuts in iOS or Android to disable the Pi hole for the whole house for 5 or 10 or 15 minutes. Oh. If you need to get past a site that's not working with the blocking on. So like I was trying to look at my Twitter analytics, which is on a blocked .ad domain today. And I hit the button and I was able to look at Twitter analytics for 5 minutes, which was a complete waste of my time. But that's a whole other thing.
Yeah, that's handy.
Yeah, so
the only other thing I can think to add is I just started. I don't know if I'm going to switch fully or not. I still use Chrome for better or worse. Go ahead.
I was just say I switched to Firefox more than a year ago now. And the big change is that where Chrome will put every single tab that you have open in memory until you start running out of memory, Firefox only does like 3 or 4 based on time.
Okay.
So like if you have a stalled tab that you haven't opened in 3 days, it takes a moment for it to load back in. But then after that, you're back in business.
Okay.
It's pretty good. It uses a lot less memory and performance on Google stuff seems much better than it has been in the past.
Honestly, I was thinking about switching off of Chrome for performance reasons as much as security privacy stuff. But I will say I installed the new Edge based on Chromium.
Yeah.
A few days ago. So, you know, same
chaotic neutral Chromium.
Sure. Same like rendering engine as Chrome under the hood. So it looks and feels very similar on the page. But going in the settings here, like I click the hamburger menu.
Man, I love a hamburger.
Yeah, I could really go for a hamburger right now. Privacy and services is the second option under profiles in that settings list.
That's pretty good.
And they seem to be kind of going for it. I think even on the site, when I went to download this manually and install it, I think that's how they pitched this browser as like a privacy first kind of thing. And it says like, "Hi, Brad, we value your privacy." It's got tracking prevention right at the top.
That's what Firefox does, the same thing.
Okay. Maybe they're just kind of keeping up with the Joneses there then, but like it's a pretty like decent, straightforward. It's got some gigantic buttons to just like basic balanced and strict tracking prevention and some stuff like that. It's more than I've seen in Chrome, I'll say that.
So the Firefox thing has this enhanced tracking protection that's on by default, and the standard level blocks social media trackers, cross-site tracking cookies, tracking content in private windows, crypto miners, and fingerprinters. Like that's the thing that Facebook does. You can turn it up higher, but this is may break sites. So
yeah.
I don't know. I've blocked 12,127 trackers since September 5th, 2019. So I guess is when this feature rolled out.
That seems like a lot.
Number's gone down a lot this week since I added the pie hole, though. I'll be.
Imagine that.
Shocking.
Yeah. And you got me considering it again now.
I've got a pie hole jail for my free NAS.
I looked into it. The pie hole people do not officially support installations on FreeBSD.
It was a big, I looked at it and it was going to be an enormous pain in the ass that involved compiling stuff. And I was like, this is something that if I suggest to Brad, he'll probably do it.
Maybe.
Keep notes.
Well, whatever. They are transitioning FreeNAS to Linux, or there is a Linux product that they just detailed today and are starting to spin up work on. So
this would fit nicely in a Linux, what do they call them? Jail instance?
On Linux, there's a lot more options. There are containers, Linux containers. Oh, right. There's LXC.
Linux supports Docker better.
Well, yes, but there's also FreeNAS Docker. I'm talking way out of my depth because I've just started looking into that stuff, but there are more options there.
There we go.
I may not wait that long. Sorry to just hijack this and turn it into a NAS conversation. You think
you're just going to go into it?
I might just roll my own Ubuntu or Debian installation and just not wait. I don't know.
It's not like I need anything specific that FreeNAS offers at this point, because it's not like I just use jails and ZFS.
Yeah. Like all I'm capable of doing all that stuff at the command line at this point, but it would be a lot of work. Like I've edited smb.conf enough to know what I'm doing there.
Yeah.
But having to do it all yourself without the UI to automate a lot of it and streamline a lot of it.
Project.
A lot of work.
The other thing is you don't get the support when something goes wrong of a community that can say, oh, I'm having the exact same problem in my configuration, which is the same as yours.
Yeah. I don't know.
Also, because of the way FreeNAS works, assuming you're not changing the upgrading ZFS or downgrading ZFS, you can always just, change the boot device and set it up.
I could give it a shot. Just import.
Yeah, see how it goes. And then always roll back if you have to.
That's true. It is an option. But there's a lot more I could say there, but we'll save it for another time.
This has been a fun, upbeat discussion.
Yeah, I'm feeling great about the direction of digital society here. Everything's going to turn out just fine.
But if you wanted to listen to something fun and upbeat, you could hear us talk about the pie hole, setting up the pie hole more, talk about the Mister.
Yeah, talk about my stack of ancient hard drives.
Your huge stack of ancient hard drives. You could talk about my, God-tier breakfast sandwich that I had for dinner last night.
That sounded really good.
Seriously, it was the culmination of 10 years worth of sandwich making, all in one 8-bite sandwich, 12-bite sandwich.
We can't get back into that. I haven't had dinner yet.
I'm going to go eat dinner as soon as we hang up. And you can do that by subscribing to the TechPod Patreon, which is at patreon.com/techpod. In addition to the monthly patron-only episodes, you get access to the TechPod Discord, which is full of people who are much smarter than Brad and I, talking about really cool stuff constantly.
Wait, you can't say that out loud. It's totally true, but you can't say that.
Look, they can't hear us. This is fine. We're going to edit this part out.
Okay.
But yeah, it's a fascinating community of wonderful people. Yeah. Roman Mars calls the 99PI listeners beautiful nerds, and I think that we're going to take that over because our people are nerdier and more beautiful than the 99PI listeners.
I agree.
So
yeah,
and as always, thank you to all of our patrons for your support. We appreciate you, and we couldn't do the show without you. And extra special thanks to Kurt Brownridge, Jacob Chappell, Andrew Cotton, and David Allen, our executive producer level patrons. Anyway, that's patreon.com/techpod. As always, if you want to help the show, tell your friends, leave a review on iTunes, subscribe to the Patreon.
Free breakfast sandwich included with every pledge.
No, that's a metaphorical.
Come over to Will's house, he'll whip you up one of these classic.
Socially distancing, free picture of a breakfast. There's a picture of the breakfast sandwich on the Patreon right now.
There's going to be a responsibly distanced line down the block from your house.
I ate half of that and I was like, this sandwich is so good, I have to take a picture. So I took a picture.
Ow. The action shot.
I mean, it is. Look, the eggs were perfect. The bacon was crisp.
Oh, I said we can't get into gooey and melty. We have to get out of here. I'm hungry.
And I put mayonnaise on the English muffin and then griddled the English muffin so it got insane. All nice and brown. And
I had never even heard of a bacon press before, but here we are.
How do you think they make that bacon so flat, man?
Learn something new every day, I guess.
Yeah, you gotta have that. It's a cast iron. It's like you can just put something on top of the bacon. It doesn't have to be it. Anyway, see y'all next week. Bye, everybody.